All right, time for Jays Talk. Show Ali, Nick Ashbourne. We are live on Sportsnet.ca, on the Sportsnet app, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. You can shoot us a text at 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. For those curious, Jays Talk, of course, will take your calls during the regular season, but the phone lines will open for good starting on Thursday. For now, we will stick with the text at 590-590. Though, Nick, I do look forward to hearing the dulcet tones of our listeners beginning on Thursday when Blair and Barker take over. For us, though, text line again, open 590-590. I wanted to start by talking about Yusei Kikuchi. And I only wanted to start here, certainly because of his performance today, but you and I actually spent some time talking about Kikuchi in the pregame because, you know, we're kind of thinking to ourselves, well, how are you gonna line up the first series of the season? You're going to get Berríos in opening day. Then after that, it's kind of a question mark, right? You're not really sure where Gausman's going to slot in there. If he does in the first turn through the rotation, you know, Bowden Francis is a part of that. And of course, Bassett and Kikuchi are in there as well. But, you know, a part of it is how much do you want to stress, you know, stressful innings is what you hear. That's like kind of buzzword about pitchers. How many stressful innings do you really want Berríos and Bassett to have to pitch in like beginning and end of March, the very beginning of the season? And a lot of that also certainly hinges on how good you think Yusei Kikuchi will pitch. Now, his final stat line was not very promising. 3 1/3, 6 hits, 8 runs, all of which were earned, 2 strikeouts, he issued 3 walks and gave up 3 home runs, 1 to Andy Ibañez, 1 to Jake Rogers, and a mammoth home run from Akil Baddoo. I always say to you, like, grain of salt with the spring results, but how do you read what we saw from Kikuchi today?
It's interesting because if he were, say he were Chris Bassett and right. He had this exact same performance, I would say things such as, you know, his velocity was good. It was in Kikuchi's case here, it was about 95, which is what his season average is. He threw 83 pitches, also positive because he's building towards, you know, regular season starts where he's going to look to be towards 90 or 100. The thing with Kikuchi is he's coming off a bit of an odd spring so far where we just haven't seen a lot of him. And he doesn't have that same level of track record where you can say, throw away the results. This guy's a veteran. He'll get it sorted out. Like his career has just been a bit spottier than that. So I think there's some level of concern. Like in the second inning, we saw a little bit of that 2022 Kikuchi where he really wasn't even competitive with right. The strike zone. Overall, the fact he's getting built up, the fact that his velocity looked better than it did in previous outings, it's all good. There's some wind component to at least the first couple of home runs. There are things you could say that kind of mitigate how ugly the stat line was, but it's hard to come away from this outing feeling better about Yusei Kikuchi than you did coming in.
And I think, too, it's because, like you said, we just hadn't seen him a whole ton. Like I think it's fair to say we have seen Berríos quite a bit. We've seen Bassett quite a bit, and I think Bassett's lined up to start either tomorrow or Monday, so we're going to see Bassett pretty soon. But, you know, you want to see the third consistent starter for this team, knowing that Manoah's still on the shelf a little bit, knowing that Gausman, obviously, if he was healthy, he would kind of push everyone down by a start or by a rotation spot, if you want to call it that. But he's not healthy, at least right this second. I still don't think it necessarily means with Gausman that you're going to see him miss like a month of the season, right? That's not like, again, there is some team speaks, some double speak when it comes to how to parse what the team say, the players say versus like what is actually happening. But things seem to be relatively positive with Gausman. Having said that, if he misses even 2 turns in the rotation, it does become a question as to how they adjust for that. And I said this to you during the pregame, but let's say Kikuchi is someone you are less certain about. There's like a faint question mark over his head versus, you know, feeling pretty confident about Berríos and Bassett. If you do go into the regular season, 4 games against Tampa at the Trop, 3 games against Houston at Minute Maid Park to start the season without any breaks in there from Thursday all the way to, I guess, the following Thursday when it's the first off day of the season, I wonder if there is any sort of idea to making sure Kikuchi and Bowden Francis don't pitch right next to each other, or Kikuchi and Mitch White don't pitch right next to each other. After a certain point, if the question marks around Kikuchi and Bowden Francis and Mitch White, there's only so much you can do to mitigate that in a span of 5 starts. But I do wonder how you try and adjust for that if it is something you are worried about.
Yeah, and I don't think that you need to sound the alarm for Kikuchi any means. Like, he does have the stuff. We saw what he did last season. He really did take step forwards. And it was clear that the changeup and the way he's working on the changeup is a big part of how today played out. That was a pitch he threw on the first home run I believe he threw three changeups in his first five pitches of the first batter. Like, this was clearly a start where there was a degree of him working on some things. So I don't want to jump down his throat too much. But at the same time, you're right. Like, you have to consider Berríos and Bassett to be those solid guys that you can really trust to give you the six innings. And maybe it won't be elite run prevention, but solid above average stuff. And when you have, you know, three starters who you feel less confident in, which is how you'd feel at the beginning of the year, then there isn't a way to split it up all neatly, right? Like, when you have the majority of, you could go 1-3-5 with guys and feel like you won't tax the bullpen, you know, that's a place that is okay to be. It's never okay to be missing Kevin Gausman, yeah, obviously, but it's something you can live with. The situation they could find themselves in now is a little bit dicier, but it still remains to be seen whether they think Gausman can do a shorter start. Like, there's a lot of variables at play right now that we're going to figure out over the next couple of days.
Yeah, Yusei Kikuchi is just, I think the reason I personally am a little more wary, perhaps, Nick, is because of that 2022 season. And maybe that's unfair, right? Because Berríos also did not have a very good season prior to last year. Then he bounced back in a huge way. The only difference is Berríos has largely, I think, been good this spring versus, and again, it's not that Kikuchi has been bad in the spring. It's just that we haven't gotten a chance to see a lot of Kikuchi until today, which was, like you said, 83 pitches, by far his longest start and his longest outing of the spring, which I guess did give me some pause. But you're right. I mean, you should, in theory, you should maybe not expect exactly what you got last year, but there's also no reason to expect what you got today if that is what, you know, when you talk about his game plan going into an outing. We did see a couple of other pitchers, just to stick with the pitching staff before we talk about the position players. And look, I don't think Isert, Fraze, or Little are necessarily going to be big parts of the bullpen this season, but we did get to see Nate Pearson and Zach Pop. And it's interesting because you and I were talking about this off air during the game, but we do still know that Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson are down for now with some ailments, I suppose. Elbow inflammation for Romano, the forearm tightness for Swanson. And Schneider did speak about them pregame, and he didn't seem to be overly worried. But at least for now, they're not pitching, which leads us back to something we talked about last weekend. And it was a great point by you that I've been thinking about a lot, which is that a lot of the guys on the fringes of the bullpen had yet to differentiate themselves. And today we got to see Pearson and Pop, two guys that we've talked about before, and also two guys in the spring that just haven't done a whole lot. So I feel like them going out there and having, I would say, pretty good days today, all things considered, albeit later in the game when probably a lot of the Tigers regulars had been lifted. But still, I mean, you want to see some progression from someone. Like, you want to see some progression from anyone, really. And both of them looked, relatively speaking, sharp. So if there is some kind of issue with Romano and or Swanson, one of Pearson and or Pop could potentially be making this team, which is not something we would have forecasted even last weekend.
Yeah, I think you always knew that these type of players over the course of an 162 game season are probably going to step in at one point or another. If anything, the Blue Jays had so much good health last season that it's easy to forget how these pitchers have durability issues, get run down. Like, the act of pitching is a violent and terrible act that people do upon their shoulders and elbows. I get why they do it. There's lots of money in it, but it causes injuries. That's how it works. So when you have guys who are your ninth, 10th reliever, however you want to think about it, those guys are going to play a factor. Now, it seems like the Blue Jays are going to see those guys play a factor earlier than expected, as you said. And I also think that Toronto has more relief depth than a lot of other teams. There aren't that many teams that can have a couple of injuries and then call on a guy like Pearson, who can get up to 99, 100 and sit in the 97, 98 range with his slider, or Zach Pop, who's got this really impressive sinker and, you know, command isn't always there for him. Missing bats can be an issue for him. He got a couple strikeouts today, which is good for the Blue Jays to see. But these are pretty talented guys. They haven't distinguished themselves this spring in terms of results, but in terms of throwing them at the back end of a bullpen, they're better than what a lot of other teams would have in this type of situation.
Yeah, and it's true. And again, it's not that they are not playable. It's just, I think you'd hoped at this point, certainly in their careers, but at this point in the spring, you would have hoped to get a little bit more of a positive progression from them, which we just haven't. I just can't help but have the sinking feeling that at some point Nate Pearson is going to be on another team. Like he'll be on, I don't know, he'll be pitching for like the Rays or something, and he'll be amazing, and people will be roasting Ross Atkins in like 3 years because they let Nate Pearson go. So I hope that's not the case, but it feels like if there is any kind of issue with the bullpen, then they're probably one or both of them are probably on this team. If Jordan Romano has to miss time, let's say he starts the season on the IL, is there an obvious candidate in your mind, Nick, to be the team's closer? Because I tend to think that, like, a couple of names come to my mind, certainly, but I tend to think that they might embrace the closer by committee approach instead of handing the job to like one guy right away. There's no like obvious next guy. If that happened last year, and it could have easily just been like, okay, well, it's Jordan Hicks. Jordan Hicks is the closer after they went out and got him. I feel like there are certainly guys you can hand the job to, but I'm not sure if there's like a slam dunk candidate. But I mean, maybe you feel differently.
I mean, I think the quote unquote slam dunk candidate would probably be Eric Swanson, but now he's dealing with issues well. So it does put you in a position where you can do it by committee. They have, you know, for instance, you come up against certain lineups where lefties are their strongest bats. You can throw a lefty in there if that's the right thing to do. Garcia is the easiest guy. He has experience in that role. His velocity has been very strong this spring. He also is more of a three out one inning type of pitcher, which is a good person to put in the closer role because other guys on the roster have a little bit more multi-inning flexibility, and therefore it's sometimes better to use them in high leverage spots earlier in the game, in the sixth or seventh inning, and then kind of have them power through another frame. When you have someone who's sort of, yeah, one, two, three outs, and that's pretty much it, putting them in a role like closer where you're almost always expected to come in with no one on base and do three outs, that just seems like a natural fit to me. But it's very easy to do it by committee to some extent. It's also easy to figure out who's pitching well in a given moment. Now, if you're the Blue Jays, you're hoping Romano isn't out long enough you'll have time to figure out that type of thing. But if it does continue where he's not available to them, it might be a feeling out situation.
And don't get me wrong, it's not as though there's been news that says Jordan Romano is going to be out for any appreciable length of time. It's just with the short lead up to the season opener and him still kind of battling some issues, then I just kind of wonder if they're going to probably rightly in March take it a little bit easy with him and just, like you say, feel it out with other guys. I'm a little bit worried about Chad Green if he was to be involved in that conversation, just because he's been a little shaky for someone who I thought was like pretty strong once he came off the IL last year, like relatively speaking. Like his first appearance, I think, was at Coors Field last year, and he got absolutely rocked. So, I mean, but this is like after a lengthy layoff, he was surgery and so on, and then he plays at all places, Coors in Colorado. But then after that, he's been relatively stable. So I wonder if he might be in the mix, but again, in the spring so far, hasn't been super consistent. But I don't know, maybe a part of that is just knocking off some rust because it is the first time he's had a normal offseason in quite some time. There is some news from Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet, of course. Arden just finishing up his chat with John Schneider postgame. And I guess this is not like breaking news in the sense that this is unexpected, but I guess been made official by John Schneider. Brian Servin has made the Blue Jays opening day roster. So I suppose that does end the question. And again, Nick, it was less of a question in the last week since we last did this, but it does perhaps end the question, especially in the wake of Santiago Espinal being traded, about the 40-man spot that had been opened up with Espinal's departure, but also the battle between Servin and Peyton Henry for the backup catcher spot after Danny Jansen suffered the broken bone in his wrist.
Yeah, with Servin, the question was what he could provide offensively because he came with this good defensive reputation, and I still don't think it's fair to expect much at the MLB level, but he came in and he hit really well in the spring. You got to give him credit for that. I don't think Peyton Henry did that much to distinguish himself. The key now, to be honest, we saw in this game Alejandro Kirk kind of take a couple of bumps and bruises. Yeah. This guy needs to live in a glass box until the season starts. Like, they need Kirk so much because even with Servin doing well in spring training, he's someone they can't trust over extended periods of time. He just doesn't have that track record. And so whoever was going to be Henry or Servin, it was going to be someone who was going to play pretty much as little as they figured it was possible to play them. That's still going to be the case. And now they have to worry about that drop-off between Kirk and Servin and when they can afford to put him in the lineup. And whatever they get from him offensively is a bonus, and they just hope he can handle the staff on the defensive side.
Yeah, Kirk took the bump on the elbow on the backswing, and it was weird because he kind of called a meeting on the mound. I thought there was something wrong with Kikuchi, and then you saw the replay, and he kind of took it. Almost looked like he took it on his funny bone right there, and he kind of just wondered if it was just something he needed to walk off, because he seemed fine afterwards. He stayed in the game, and then he got beaned a little bit later on, and then immediately got taken out of the game. Just like John Schneider did not pull any punches with that. He did not need
to run the bases.
No,
Alejandro Kirk running the bases at the best of times doesn't lead to good outcomes necessarily, but running the bases in spring training when you've already had a couple bumps and bruises, absolutely not.
No, it definitely feels like it's the right time for them to announce that Brian Servant's the backup catcher, because I feel like in the next three games or so, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, we're probably going to see a fair bit of Brian Servant. A quick update before we take a break here as well and get to your text on the other side. Arden also saying Kevin Kiermaier, who left today's game with a contusion after fouling a ball off his right knee, is expected to be fine. He was not sent for any imaging. Kiermaier likely would have stayed in the game if it was the regular season, could be back in the Blue Jays lineup Sunday or Monday. So not particularly consequential, although I can't imagine that means it hurt any less, because that he fouled that ball right off his kneecap. And you and I think both had a you know, sucking in of breath in sympathy, because that did not look particularly comfortable for him.
Yeah, that elicited a visceral reaction.
Yes.
It looked unbelievably painful, and we hope that Kevin is feeling a little bit better, but it's good to hear that it's nothing serious.
You know, you could give him a rest day, load manage him maybe on Sunday, and maybe he plays on the road on Monday. All right, let's take a quick break. On the other side, I want to get to these texts. I see one from Ed, I see one from Jen. We'll get to those texts on the other side. 590-590. Name and location. Certainly chat about some other position players who had some good days as well, including Kirk, including George Springer, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Still lots to come on Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, welcome back to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network, on sportsnet.ca, and on the Sportsnet app. Show Ali, Nick Ashbourne here with you for another 10 minutes or so. Still some time to shoot us a text, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. And Nick, it is to the People's Text Line we go right now. I mentioned a couple of texts that were there before we took the break. I see Ed from Simcoe. So Ed texts in to ask, was wondering if Joey Votto has been put in the witness protection plan. Last heard he was supposed to be in a game 3 games ago and not even in the split squad game tonight or even on the injured list. Do we know where he is and what's up? I have a sneaking suspicion that it is, you know, like they have, you know, when you see like on different, like, you know, the NHL does this, the NBA does this, and it's like does not practice and then there's like a reason. I have a feeling it's like for Votto, it's just DNP old. That's what I have a feeling that's what it largely is. It just feels like there's no real reason for the rushing back, even though I'm totally with you, Ed. I want to see Joey Votto as much as anyone else, because the one AB we got against the Phillies last weekend was so tantalizing. But I'm guessing they're just taking it very easy with him since he is 40 years old.
Yeah, I mean, not to engage in too much rampant ageism, but, you know, he's in the fifth decade of his life. He's had a very unfortunate bat slipping related injury. Like you said, there's no reason to rush him, because even if everything had gone as planned, it didn't seem likely that he was going to start with the team on opening day anyway. So all you're doing is pushing a timeline where he starts in the minor leagues and then eventually makes it to the big league club if he succeeds at the minor league level. And you're just pushing it back a little bit. It's a little bit of a no harm, no foul situation, because you're not compromising your team competitively in a serious way. This was what you expected all along. There just might be a slight delay on it.
Nick Ashbourne, rampant ageist. That's on my notes for when we do Jay's Talk.
Not young enough to be a rampant ageist. Well, I mean, we're going to get there.
There's another text here from Jen in Toronto. Hey guys, just curious why Aurelvis Martinez has not played much. Also thoughts on Barger and Lucas. No comment on Piscio. Thanks. That's Jen from Toronto. That's pretty funny. Okay, so
catching strays, Kevin Piscio.
I know, poor Kevin Piscio. Can't catch a break. Aurelvis Martinez has not played much. It's true. He did get optioned back to the minor league roster, well, I guess last week, or maybe even 2 weeks ago at this point. But I mean, it's a fair question because we have, regardless, still seen like Barger, who has also already been optioned, still get playing time. So it might, maybe they're just less satisfied with what Martinez has provided them, which is unfortunate because, again, he is the highest ranked position player prospect in the whole system. Like, I think he's the second ranked prospect overall behind Ricky Tiedemann and the top ranked position player prospect. So it is tough because I was pretty high on Aroldis Martinez at the beginning of spring because he was getting a little bit of run, but not so much lately, Nick.
Yeah, I'm not sure we have a concrete answer to that question. I will say whatever they're doing with Aroldis Martinez right now is what they believe is in the best interest of his development. That doesn't mean they're right, but it's what they believe.
Yeah.
And there is a component of defensive focus with him. Like, he's playing a lot more second base these days. So I could see them kind of transferring his focus preseason into defensive work because that's hard to get in over the course of a minor league season. When you're playing every day, it's hard to focus on that aspect of it. The reason they've moved around the diamond is partly because of the needs at the big league level. Yeah. So the fact that they're moving him to positions that they need at the big league level is an indication that they think highly of him. It's just not taking the form of him getting consistent spring training time.
I mean, of all the positions the Blue Jays don't need more guys to be good at, it's second base right now.
It is a jumble out there, but they don't have one person who is positioned to take that and run with it.
Right.
Davis Schneider, I guess you could say, is the one who's most likely to attain that level, but there's so many question marks associated with them that they have all these different mix and match type of pieces and no one ready to take that job and run with it. And in theory, Aroldis Martinez could be that guy as soon as at some point during the season, although that's far from a certainty.
On Jen's other half of this question, thoughts on Barger and Lucas. On Lucas, at least, I do genuinely believe that if Lucas was, I don't know, like the starting center fielder of, I'm just going to throw out the White Sox or the A's, if he was there, or even the Nationals, right? If he was like a starting center fielder on some of these teams that you think are going to lose like 90 to 100 games this year, he probably would be an everyday player. It's just on teams that have more consistent offensive options, you probably would take those guys if you can get, you know, like 85 to 90% of Lucas's defensive capabilities, defensive prowess. That's not really a knock on him because I think he is. I do think he's played well enough in the spring to warrant some kind of major league spot. It's just where he is right now, and given the constraints of the active roster, he probably just gets squeezed, unfortunately, from a position basis, which is a little unfair because he has played well.
Yeah, he's certainly a victim of the Blue Jays' depth. Like, he's someone who performed very well at the AAA level, has a lot of sort of MLB-ready tools, for lack of a better term.
Right.
Like, he can play defense at a high level. His plate discipline is very solid. He never really got a chance last season. Like, he appeared in 29 games, but he came to the plate 31 times. So he was basically like a late-game defensive replacement, barely got the starts. And that's what happens when you've been kicking around the minor leagues for quite a while. He's 29 now. He's not considered a top prospect. He's a very handy depth piece for the Blue Jays to have because, like you said, at the major league level, he probably has a decent floor. Like, you could give him a little run, and there's a good chance he would give you something. But because his ceiling isn't considered particularly high, they're not inclined to give him the opportunities unless he absolutely forces them to do it.
Yeah, and I don't think we've gotten quite to that level, which is why he's probably going to start the year most likely in the minors. Addison Barger, too, I think I have been impressed by Addison Barger. It's just, again, similar to the Aroldis Martinez conversation. He is also, I mean, he probably does require a little bit more seasoning, for lack of a better term, in the minors, but he also is a victim of the positional depth the Blue Jays have, especially in the infield, because, I mean, it was a battle for Ernie Clement to make the roster. He was probably the most accomplished in the spring of guys who are, you know, wanting to earn roster spots. It doesn't mean Barger will never play for the Blue Jays. It's just, you know, right now he again is someone who is beaten out by other people. We have a couple minutes left here, Nick. I did want to get to Springer and Vladdy just because they had some pretty good days. Springer had a pair of hits here, and you know, as I guess last season, he did not see the ball well, and maybe, you know, the lack of power was something that concerned me to somewhat extent here. And we did see him roll over a lot of outside pitches last year a lot, which honestly, I'm sure a lot of people were sick of after a certain point. But this year, again, spring is what it is, but he seems to be seeing the ball way better than he did last year. Like, he hit 102 mile an hour double on a pitch that he probably would have grounded out maybe a couple times last year. So I think I'm hoping that's at least an outcome we get more of during the regular season compared to 2023.
Yeah, he's putting a charge into the ball, and he's keeping the ball in the air, as you mentioned. Like, we talk about Vladdy and ground balls like constantly over the last 3 years has been an incessant talking point. But that's something with Springer as well that had been an issue when he's not looking himself. Just over the course of the spring, again, he had good results last spring and he didn't do well during the regular season. So it's hard to say with absolute confidence that this is an indication he's in for a big year, but he looks good at the plate right now. And this is what you want at the very end of spring training as well. Like, he's going to enter the MLB season in a strong rhythm already. And that's basically the best you can hope for when it comes to getting veterans ready for the season, because they're not trying to win jobs. They're not trying to necessarily iterate a new swing or anything like that. Like, he's an incredibly accomplished veteran. He's probably not radically changing what he does. He's just trying to be the best version of himself. And that's what he's looked like over the last few weeks.
And he's looked pretty well, pretty good moving the bases, I would say, as well, which is a positive. Not that he didn't last season, but he looks pretty sharp right now, and you hope that continues. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. certainly looks pretty sharp. You and I actually spent a lot of time extolling some of his virtues based on how he's looked in the spring. And again, I do feel like spring is a tough time to evaluate players on a game-by-game basis. But on the whole of the spring, Nick, I do feel like he has looked different, right? Like, he's making better contact. He's swinging the ball a little bit more judiciously. He still has the power. He's lifting the ball. You mentioned the ground balls, which you've talked about ad nauseum. He's not doing that quite as much. That's what you want to see, which is, I think, like, again, it's hard to say, like, okay, well, he's doing it all in the spring. It absolutely means it's going to happen in the regular season. That's not always what happens. But it is nice to see him do that in the spring, because it does give you confidence that there is some kind of change coming after a season that I think most people would consider disappointing.
When I think about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and when he is absolutely ticking, I think of two particular types of swings. One of them is just the bat speed. The ball is in close to me and I absolutely turn on and yank it. That's like him against Gerrit Cole when he had that multi-home run game. He has that bat speed that very few players have. He's able to get around on it. And that's when you see the 440-foot home runs, like the ones that leave Fenway Park, things like that. That's a swing to look for that we've seen in the spring. The other one is when he drills it the other way on a line, like what I like to call like the Giancarlo Stanton type home run, where it's like 110 miles per hour. It barely gets out of the park simply because it's not high enough. And sometimes he bangs them off the wall for a single because he hits them so hard. And we have seen both of these type of swings in the spring. It is not as much like last year when there's a lot of balls to the center of the field, the big part of the ballpark, where even his incredible power can go to die. So it's encouraging to see him getting the amazing pull hits and also putting the ball the other way with authority. Again, you know, as much as we want to be cautious about spring, there is no doubt that he looks really strong at the moment.
This was a strong performance from one Nick Ashbourne today. Thanks for doing this with me, pal. Oh,
thank you. It was a pleasure.
That does it for us here on Jays Talk. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Protection. Protect your vehicle from rust today. For a special offer, find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Jason Behringer, Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. Tomorrow, the final spring edition of Jays Talk. We'll be doing bold predictions to wrap up spring training. I can't wait. The regular season starts on Thursday with Blair and Barker. We'll talk to you later.